Hello everyone, my name is Elise and with Evie I am the co-host of the Femina podcast, in which we start conversations, break taboos and laugh. Our goal is not to only show a refreshing perspective, but to also make sure that you'll feel more empowered and assured after listening to this podcast than you did before. So today's podcast is going to be super interesting. I just want to give you a little backstory before I press play on today's episode. I'm talking to Ryan Smith. Ryan Smith is a father, he is a husband, he is a creative minister, a music director, and the head of the creative arts faculty at C3 Church. The reason why I wanted to do an episode with Ryan is because he brought up some really interesting points about spiritual health and how the youth view religion, I put that in little quotes there, and also how they view Christianity. And I thought it was super interesting. So I was like, I want to do a podcast with you. We're going to sit down and we're going to chat. And I'm so excited for this episode because Ryan brings up so many open-minded and fresh perspectives to the whole conversation of religion, again, in quote marks, and spirituality and finding purpose in life. So I really hope you enjoy this. I have to apologize in advance though, because the audio isn't as amazing as our other episodes due to the fact that I made a mistake. It's on me. I'm so sorry. I don't want to go into it, but I made a mistake with the audio. It does change halfway through, but yeah, it's not too big of a deal. But anyways, enjoy.
Hi everyone, this is Elise and Ryan. We're here for the Femina podcast, and today we're going to have a really interesting chat.
Wonderful.
About spiritual health.
Love that.
So Ryan, introduce yourself.
Well, my name is Ryan Smith and I'm 45 years of age. I've been married for 23 years to my high school sweetheart, Michelle, and we have three beautiful teenagers, Madison, Michaela and Lachlan. They're 19, 17 and 15. And I've been involved in ministry for 25 years. I was a music director of a church called C3 SYD, formerly known as C3 Church Oxford Falls, which was formerly known as Christian City Church, and ran worship teams and the music in the creative department for 20 years. But now I'm currently the head of the creative faculty at the college, teaching young people about music theory, concepts of jazz harmony, but also creative health, spiritual health, spiritual life and the inner life, and how to be creatively and emotionally healthy, expressing themselves as artists and musicians.
Which is so relevant now.
Oh, yeah.
So relevant.
Hot topic.
Oh my goodness, yes. So I'm just going to start with my first question to start you off.
Yes.
What does spirituality mean to you growing up?
I didn't really understand what spirituality was until I got a lot older. I had my suspicions, but it's getting a lot clearer every year that I age more and more because of my interest in it. Growing up, what it meant to me was a clear conscience and making sure that I did the right thing, which was probably very relevant and appropriate for me growing up in the 70s, 80s and 90s, because grew up in a time where there was right and wrong was very much defined. You respected and honored your parents. You were punished for doing the wrong thing and you really didn't have a lot of scope and freedom to think. So spirituality for me probably growing up was about keeping a clear conscience and doing what was right in the eyes of people that were older than me in a position of authority.
Yeah. Were you in a strict household?
No. Ironically, I didn't grow up in a Christian family, but I grew up in a family where the sense of love, acceptance and generosity from both of my parents was so powerful, so authentic and so profound that it was more Christian than most people that went to church.
That is a very interesting point. I actually listened to a podcast the other day, and I think it was a minister who was talking, and he was saying that now in this day of age, people who don't conform, like they say they're not religious, so they're more atheist or they just don't really care, act more like a good Christian than people who say they are a good Christian.
Yes, yes. It's fascinating. Yeah. It's interesting because if you were to analyze some of the statistics around the population in Australia alone regarding church and spirituality, we are seeing a lot of people withdraw from membership, not just in church, but in things like sporting clubs or anything that requires a certain kind of loyalty.
Yeah.
We're seeing that across the board. That's been something that's evolved, certainly in the postmodern world. People don't want to feel tied down to ownership or membership.
Yeah.
They would much rather their life to be a bit more fluid and start people doing community in things like shopping centres, cafes, those sorts of places. But there's a lot of people that don't subscribe to the notion of going to church in order to be spiritual.
Yeah.
You know, they're wanting, and the people that are not doing that, if for the people who do go to church, who claim to be spiritual, they're wanting to see an authentic lifestyle and outward expression of their faith. Not yeah. something they hide behind, but something that is real.
Yeah, because there was a big, I mean, I know when my mum grew up Christian as well. I'm pretty sure she's Christian. But it was, you had to go to church every Sunday.
Yes.
Like it was like forbidden not to go. Mm-hmm. And when she did rebel and not go, she was in just the most trouble ever, because it's a sin to not, like, some people find that as a sin.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's really cool that you grew up in a non-Christian household. So how did you get into being in it, like creating a Christian household that you're in now?
That is a great question. I was always mindful of God.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know a lot about Christianity, but I was always mindful of God, a greater power, a sovereign power, life after death, why are we all here? Very philosophical from a young age. For as young as I can remember, when I did the wrong thing, I'd apologize to God.
Really?
From the age of 4, 5, 6, 7, sorry, God, sorry, God, sorry, God. It was quite obsessive. Yeah. And it was this, I don't know whether it was a performance that was in me or this need for things to be perfect or for the need to keep accounts with God, short accounts with God, but I would often apologize quickly if I knew I'd done the wrong thing, whether it was lying to my parents, using bad language,
yeah.
slamming doors, whatever the case may have been, it was always there. But as far as forging my own path, it wasn't until I found myself in the early years of high school at Barrenjoey where I met a lot of the youth ministers who would come from the local churches to do things like inner school Christian fellowship. They would invite you to youth groups, that I started to ask more probing questions. So I was sort of in year 6 at Bogola Plateau Primary, and then year 7, year 8, year 9 at Barrenjoey High School, I would drive every local youth minister nuts with my questions. I would ask all these questions. I'd try to take my curiosity further, and it just evolved from there.
Why is that so? Honestly, why do people hate questions? I mean, I love asking questions. As I said before, I drive my mom nuts, because I also like to come up with such, like hypothetical situations, like what if this happened? And it could be as crazy as, what if an alien just planted itself on the grass right there? What would we do?
Mm.
And it's just, I don't know, they come to my mind. They're very intrusive thoughts, but you just want to ask questions all the time, because what if?
It's brilliant that you say that, because, okay, there are people out there who get frustrated by people who are inquisitive and who ask a lot of questions, right? I think they get frustrated because I think, A, they don't want to have to think.
Yeah.
B, that they probably don't have the answers. C, there may be a fear that they're going to end up more confused. So people tend to want to skim and keep things low key. They don't want to do a deep dive, because a deep dive forces you into a place where you have to ask, well, what exactly do I think?
Yeah.
And where am I at with this? Exactly. And it's confronting it. Yes, what is life? What do I really believe? What's my value system? Is it one that's been projected onto me by my upbringing, my friends, my teachers? Or who am I? What do I want? How do I get it? What do I really believe? Yeah. That's a terrifying space.
It is terrifying. And I feel like I go through that every week, honestly. Because it's like, at the end of the day, you don't know. It's like you can make yourself know and like be happy with what you want to know and believe, which is great.
Mm.
Whatever keeps you happy and a healthy person.
Mm.
But at the same time, you never know.
Well, you don't. My dad used to say this to me: the questions are easy to ask, the answers are impossible.
So hard.
They're impossible.
Yeah. I'm kind of, you know, a bit nervous for when I have my own kids, because they're probably going to be more inquisitive than I am. And I'm going to be like, honestly, I have no idea.
It's going to get even harder. Yes.
Yeah.
No, there's going to be more progressive and more greater curiosity.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So you talked about C3. And
yes.
How did you get into C3?
Well, when I was in high school and these local youth ministers had come and started to share, and I'd asked questions, then I took myself off to the local youth group at the Anglican church. I learned the Bible. I went to Bible studies. I went on Christian camps.
All
I got
on
in
your own willpower?
All on my own. My parents were completely supportive, But I went on that pathway, and which is actually where I met Michelle, because her parents and family, they'd all ended up coming into the same church. Yeah. And so I found myself in that space. But how I got to C3 was actually quite a profound sort of moment in my life, because I'd been in this Anglican church for a number of years, mm-hmm. year 8, year 9, year 10, year 11, year 12. By the time I graduated high school, I was craving something more, something deeper, something more powerful, something that would challenge me more. I felt like I'd outgrown the space I was in. Not to say that it was a bad church, but I was... Yes, it happens. It is. It's life. And I thought to myself, okay, well, what actually is it that I'm wanting? Is it a deeper encounter? Is it a greater knowledge? Is it to be challenged on a deeper level? And what had happened was there was a revival that took place in 1994 and 1995 that came out of the east coast of Canada in Toronto and parts of Florida in America, which was referred to as the Toronto Blessing or the Pensacola Revival.
Just explain what a revival is.
So a revival is something that happens in Christendom, in in all versions and expressions of Christianity, where the Holy Spirit starts to move at a deeper level to break religious thinking and to bring reformation or a change in understanding, or to show God's people, or the people of God, I should say, more to his personality and more to the things of the Spirit than they're already seeing.
Right.
And it stirs up passion and fire and enthusiasm and inspiration and revelation in the believer, mm-hmm. and causes them to shed old layers, old false constructs, things that they've come to rely on, that they've gotten too comfortable, and all of that stuff gets smashed and they get revived, they get set on fire again.
Is this usually welcomed, or is there a lot of people who are like of older age who don't enjoy this?
Great question.
Hold on to the traditionalism.
That's a mixed bag. There's a lot of people that resist it because it means uncoupling from a old way of doing things that's now comfortable, that is predictable, that means that we're not going to change this.
And change is scary to a lot of people.
Very much so, particularly to an older generation who gets set in their ways. It's not always welcomed. Mm-hmm. For some people it is, because you get to a situation where the pain of staying the same has become too great, right, than the pain of actually having to change.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it is welcomed by some, but not by all.
So what happened with this
Well, you could call it a reformation. I'd call it a revival. I'd call it a move of God. Mm-hmm. And we've seen revivals have broken out ever since the day of Christ, like the resurrection of Jesus Christ, 2,000 years. We've seen revivals happen in history, all through the course of history at different parts of the world and at different times.
So what's a major one that maybe I probably
know? Well, the Azusa Street Revival is a revival that happened in the early parts of the 20th century that came out of Los Angeles. We've had the Welsh Revival. I'm not too sure when that was. I haven't studied revivals enough. Probably the most recent one would have been the Toronto Blessing in the mid-1990s. When I was in,
graduated.
Correct, yeah, out of my teens, early 20s. And that was referred to as the River. And that took place in a number of churches where services went from 1 hour to 4 hours overnight.
Oh my gosh.
Because people would wait in the presence of God.
Yeah.
And the services would go longer, people would linger, people would contemplate. There was manifestations, people would laugh, people would cry, we'd see all sorts of things take place.
And you were part of this.
I was part of, yes. I actually left the Anglican Church in 1994 with the actual support of the local minister, which is unheard of, because I went around it the right way and said, I'd like to go to C3. Something's happening. There's something happening globally. And it's a move of the Spirit. And I'm hungry for it. And I don't want to miss it. Yeah. I don't want to miss out. I don't want to. Totally supportive. And so off I went with Michelle when we were 19. She was 18, I was 19. Off we went to Brookvale, to when it was Christian City Church. And we've
so
never...
Far away as well.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I need a passport to get past Mona Vale.
Oh my goodness. We went a whole spiritual journey, physically and mentally.
Absolutely.
That's so cool. So you've been at C3 since you graduated.
Yeah.
what do you do at C3 now? You've explained that, I think, but I'm
heading up the creative arts faculty, teaching a lot of people in their late teens and early 20s, some cases early 30s, in the music and worship course and in the leadership and theology course on life in the spirit, New Testament theology, how to be a creative minister, how to stay emotionally and spiritually healthy, how to have a prayer life, this sort of thing.
So how would that be relevant to, say, Zoomers, as you call them, people of my generation, cusp of the new century?
Yeah. How would it be relevant?
Yeah, or just, you know, extra interesting to us.
Okay. I think it's important for your age bracket to learn about this sort of stuff for a couple of reasons. Number one, if we don't understand how we are made up and how we are wired and how we've been designed, then we won't know how to take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
So if we just see ourselves as a body and as a brain, we're going to be missing out on some pretty powerful components that make up our unique self, which is not just physical, right? So the body is a shell. We are a body. We are a brain and a heart. Like there are the material aspects of our temporary selves. They're not going to last forever. Our time here on earth in as a shell is temporary.
Mm-hmm.
But the inner life is weightless. It's made up of our spirit and our soul, which can't be measured or weighed. It's weightless. And our body is a shell or a vessel that houses our spirit and our soul, which is our emotions, our temperament, our gift mix, our passions for things, our likes, our dislikes, our tastes. And I think it's important for this emerging generation to understand that if you emphasize just the physical and just the three-dimensional and just the things that you are in front of you, and you neglect the things that you can't see but are there, your inner life will become malnourished.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous.
Yeah, and that's how a lot of people find, like, they feel like they don't have a lot of purpose in their life. And I mean, I know this firsthand. Like, I think last year, I finished school, I was in an absolute existential crisis. I just thought, I don't have a lot of money. I can do this. I live here. But what am I doing?
Mm.
Like, what is that? I've only just finished school. It's, 13 years of my life. Felt like forever, but it's only 13 years of my life.
Mm.
And then when I started Femina, it was all of a sudden I had this bigger purpose. Mm. And I knew that even after, like, even if I'm dead, I did something.
Mm. You know
what I mean? It's just like I had that greater purpose.
Of course.
Which is where you get that drive and, you know, you feed, that's probably where Feed the Soul came from.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and purpose is very much linked to that, because depending on what your theology is and what one would believe, your spirit and your soul is going to live forever.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then we need to turn our attention to the concept of eternity.
Mm-hmm.
We need to move towards our divinity and ask ourselves the question, is there life after death? Who's in control of it? And that if our bodies and the vessel and what we have in the third dimension, the present, the here and now, is only temporary, but we do have a permanent side to us, an eternal side to us, then we need to give that sufficient thought and consideration and learn about what it is so that we can take care of it.
Yeah.
If you don't know what your spirit and your soul are, you can't look after them. That's number one. Number two, if you don't communicate to God and your creator in your spirit and in your soul, right, you won't know what you're here for.
Yeah.
And there's two brilliant days. The day you're born is a terrific day. The second most brilliant day is the day you discover why.
Wow, okay. That's so interesting. I never thought about that. Because a lot of people go their whole lives looking for, like, a meaning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because I especially think, I'm so open-minded to all types of religion, if you're spreading love and you're open-minded. But I've always thought that, like, especially God, very interesting. Because I always thought, why? First of all, why is he a he?
Mm.
But then he's also not a he.
Mm.
He's a being.
Correct.
And then also why God? Like, where did that name come from?
Mm.
And why, like, why does he, like, why does he cause pain and this, but then he also causes, like, amazing things. And then he has animals as well. Like, animals, okay, honestly, animals freak me out. Because if you think about them, they have superpowers. Animals fly, they swim, they breathe underwater, they do this and that. I've always thought the thought of having a God was so interesting because you don't know if he is really there. But there's, like, a lot of people believe that there is something. But you get that kind of meaning from thinking that there's something.
Absolutely.
Like, it, like, you may say, like, yeah, if that helps you get through life, then definitely. If that helps you kind of, like, stay away from being scared of the unknown, then definitely. But at the same time, he is unknown. Or they are unknown. Whoever they are.
It's brilliant that you, what you just said was was fantastic. It was beautiful. What you said, particularly how you mentioned the animals. And as soon as you said that, I was reminded of something that I learned years ago, which is this, that we as human beings are the only species in the created order of things that can lose their intentionality.
Definitely.
So we are different. We are different to create. We don't know. A blade of grass might have a soul. We don't know about animals, whether they have a soul or don't have a soul. I mean, but we have been made in the image of God. And here's the thing that, that we don't talk about enough, right? You've got church, you've got spirituality, you've got the people throw around the term religion. But here's the deal. Let's just blow all that up for a second. It's not a religion. It's about a relationship.
Yeah. With everything?
Well, when it comes to you or I or anybody else, we have no say in the day we're born. None whatsoever.
Yeah.
But the
day we die.
Correct. Well, to some degree.
Yeah.
But the day we're born, no say. But the day you're born, you are born with free will and the power to choose.
Are you though?
Absolutely. Yeah. The only power that you and I have is the power to choose in life.
Well, now, but the day that we're born, are we...
You don't have the power to choose if you're born or not, but the moment you are, you're born with free will.
But we're babies.
To some degree. I suppose...
I was thinking very, like...
I mean, it's hard to know when innocence starts and stops.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really grey one.
Yeah.
That's a grey one. Like, when does innocence stop? And right now, that's a hot topic, hot debate right now. Mm-hmm. Of that, there is no doubt. But when it comes to this whole concept of the power to choose and free will, when it comes to relationship... We have the power to choose to be in relationship with our divine creator.
Yeah.
Because it's not by accident that we're here.
Yeah.
If the fact that we're here comes down to, look out, whoopsie, there you go, tag, you're it, you're born, you live and you die, that's a really sad state of affairs.
Yeah, just pinpointing a timeline of 2 points and that's it.
100%. Yeah. It can't be that.
Yeah.
Like,
there's
got to be more to it.
It's too much of a coincidence.
Too much of a coincidence. Yeah. Here's the deal. If you talk to any reputable scientist, they will tell you, right? They can tell you the when. They can tell you the which. They can tell you the what.
Mm-hmm.
They can even tell you the how. But they can't tell you the why.
Yeah.
But when you...
This is going to keep me up at night, honestly. Tonight good. I'm going to be thinking.
Look out.
Yeah.
Just when you thought you were going to get a decent night's sleep. The why is... found when you move towards your divine creator.
You have to figure out your own why.
Correct.
Yeah.
The why is the most important question. Because
keeps you kind of going.
100%. Yes.
Yeah.
The moment you remove hope and purpose and destiny and calling, then the Bible's really clear, without a vision the people perish, right? So you remove hope, you remove vision, you remove purpose, you remove destiny. Existing. Correct. I mean, like, what in the world is one living for?
Yeah. Well, yeah, how are we meant to know? Honestly, we could, maybe we are all living because we're part of a simulation and we're a video game. Who knows?
Yeah. Is this desk even here?
Yeah.
You know, absolute truth. But it's about revelation. It's actually about the things that we don't live out of knowledge. We live out of the things that have been revealed to us.
You teach this. Will you kind of... explore this with your students?
Yes, all the time, all the time. Yeah. Probing questions, high-value questions, critical thinking.
Yeah.
But what I try to do is I try to create a space for them to experience things of a spiritual nature.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal, you can talk all day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk all day. But it's not until you engage your spirit, right? Because you can talk about IQ all day.
Mm-hmm.
Intellectual quotient, go and do your IQ test. You get above 130 or 135, whatever, you're brilliant, you're on the brilliant side. Talk about EQ, which was a hot topic in the 90s. EQ was about emotional intelligence, sensing the unvoiced questions of a room, yeah, feeling a person's pain, being more empathetic and sympathetic towards, like, emotional intelligence, right? But there is a thing that eclipses both, and it's called SQ. No one's ever really written on it, as far as I can tell. SQ, spiritual quotient.
Yeah.
You could actually interpret what's going on around you,
yeah,
if you can engage your spirit. Some would say auras, vibes. Some
energy.
Yeah, some would say energy.
Being really
aware. Yeah, that, yeah, kind of thing. But there are counterfeit spirits. The spirit world is highly structured. There is a demonic side. Yeah, like depending on your theology,
mm-hmm,
and what you believe, there are demons, and there is a demonic side to the spirit world. And
do you find that they place themselves in humans?
Yes, 100%. You got to remember, like, what's interesting is that. We are a vessel. I said that before. Our bodies are a vessel, yes, right? So an issue that we have to address amongst a younger generation, which is an extremely hard one to address, because anyone born post 1995 or 1998, anyone who was kind of born around 9/11, who sees the world through a cracked lens,
mm-hmm,
is probably going to not subscribe to this concept of sin and needing to get your life right.
Yeah.
They're going to want to talk about what's right for you. Self-care, self-honor.
Preservation.
Yes, the postmodern world, the truth is relative argument.
Yeah.
I'm just wanting to live my best life. I'm just, yeah, doing the best I can. Those sorts of things. Very difficult to say to somebody who's young in age about this concept of sin.
So this is the part where I messed up, or maybe the computer messed up. The audio stopped recording at this point. I know, so annoying, because it was just getting juicy. We also had to move rooms as there was a bit of background noise. So the rest of the audio is slightly better, and it goes into Ryan's role at C3 and his role as an educator and his perspective on the youth and how they digest wisdom when it comes to religion and spirituality. And it's really interesting. So yes, again, I am really sorry, but there's nothing I can do about it. So enjoy again.
Had a little pause there, but we're back. We're just going to go into the next question,
sure,
which was, so we talked about C3, we talked about your role in C3, which, yeah, sounds amazing and sounds really interesting. Do you find like any struggle teaching, especially people who, like, you know, Gen Z and Zoomers? Do you find that they are difficult at points? Like, you know how you talked about how they ask the hard questions?
Yes.
And do they challenge you? What are your thoughts on that?
I learned just as much from them as I would hope they would learn from me.
Mm-hmm.
This whole top down, you know, where you've got all the answers and you're the student and you shut up and listen, that's really old school.
Yeah.
I don't think this particular age group argue in order to be argumentative or rebellious or, you know, start something or start beef. I don't think that's their motivation. I think that they want I think that their desire is for people in positions of authority to embrace the grey, not be so black and white, and they want to be included. They want things to be more collaborative, more collegiate. They want to be validated for their thoughts and their ideas and their opinions. I have found them to be brilliant with their insights and with their ideas, but slow when it comes to adopting a lifestyle that requires them to sacrifice.
When someone comes to me talking about, you know, very old, racist, homophobic type culture, and I found myself to do this when they try to teach me something, I tend to kind of go, don't really, like, I'm not open-minded about it. I shut down because I was like, I don't want to hear about it. When actually, maybe they have something really interesting to say.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, definitely.
If you were to say to a Zoomer, you're either born male or female, anything else is a mental health issue. If you said that to a Zoomer, there'd be riots. Mm-hmm. You would lose everyone.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask a question. Is it possible that there's an element of truth to that? It could be, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But you can't say that because it's not that black and white.
No.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like there are people who struggle with gender dysphoria.
Yes.
And we and Christians don't need to speak up. Christians need to get educated.
Yeah.
Which means we need to understand the Bible. But we also need to understand the power of therapy and counselling. We need to understand the power of mental health medication.
Yeah.
We need to understand the power of family of origin and what's gone on in a person's history, the effects of trauma, worldviews, philosophies, where a person's grown up, and the period in history in which they've grown up.
Yeah.
So it's not just one thing through one lens. We actually have to gather enough information to make well-informed decisions and well-educated statements.
Yeah, and be completely self-aware and, you know, have an understanding that everyone is so incredibly different. Like, you can't expect one person to see exactly how you see things. I think about this all the time, that you know me differently than my mum knows me. That person on the street that I said hi to knows me completely different to the kid I went to school with. Like, absolutely. Everyone, you see everyone so differently. So how can you, like, it's hard to kind of force one lifestyle on millions.
My word.
Yeah.
You can't. You know what you've got to do? You've got to ask questions.
Yes.
And you've got to... See, here's the thing. Is love greater than truth or truth greater than love? Some people will go, they're both the same.
Yeah.
But if I post something on Facebook or on Instagram that creates massive division, but I've spoken the truth in that statement, it wasn't in love.
Yeah, it wasn't in love.
And so what's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
Why tell the truth if it's going to bring hate?
Like, people, you're better off living without, like, you're better off being happy than knowing that sad thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And when a person is truly knows that you love them without bias, without prejudice, without criticism, without intolerance, without judgment.
That's enough.
It's enough.
It's
fulfilling and it sets people free.
Yeah.
You might not approve of their lifestyle, but if you love and accept them.
Mm-hmm.
See, I believe wisdom moving forwards and maturity of all ages exists in this statement. Staying connected to others, right, without feeling the need to change them.
Yeah, definitely. It also comes back to that truth thing, to people wanting to know too much of the truth. Because, like, for example, have you ever watched Lucy, that movie Lucy?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah, with ScarJo.
Yeah, and she, like, the drugs that she was given, like, helps unlock, like, more range of her brain, and she knows too much until she doesn't exist, or she exists everywhere.
Mm.
So it's, like, that kind of thirst for knowing, for knowing the truth.
Absolutely.
Disregarding whether it's going to hurt people or do that, it's like wanting to know the truth, which is, I find, inspiring in a way, because it's like wanting to get to the bottom of things.
Yes.
Then really scary.
But there is a danger in that. See, you saying that is a really intelligent statement and question. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is that if we are not satisfied with not knowing everything, then there's a danger to it, because suddenly we're in competition with God.
Yeah. And the earth as well.
Yeah, we're acting independently from what's around us.
And that's why the earth is, you know, in jeopardy, in the environment and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because we want to know too much and we try too much and we do too much.
Yep. Yeah. We overplay our hand and we do too much. There's a terrific scripture in Genesis which talks about... the Bible says, let us make man in our image, which is the Trinity, basically Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Let us make man in our image and in our likeness. Obviously, Adam's made, then Eve's made. And God says to them, you can eat from any tree in the garden, you just can't eat from this one. And the tree was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And he said to them, you can eat from any tree, but you can't eat from this one, right? Mm-hmm. Now, right next to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, he put a tree called the tree of life. And the tree of life was one of all of the other trees that they could eat from. He just so happened to give it a name and put it right next to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So there were lots of trees in the Garden of Eden. There was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which they couldn't touch, but there was the tree of life, which was also one of many trees, and that particular tree of life was right next to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Could they eat from the tree of life? Yes, they could. Why was it right next to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? I personally believe, if you actually subscribe to that theology, that the tree of life was something which God said, if you really want to experience life and enjoy life, you have to accept the frustration and the conflict of mystery.
Yeah.
So the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that's my tree. You don't touch it.
Yeah, because that's the knowledge of everything.
Correct. But
you don't need it.
You don't need it. And they couldn't live with that. They were dissatisfied with the level of spirituality, knowledge, and revelation that God gave them. And that's part of the human condition.
Yeah.
We are dissatisfied with the level of knowledge we have.
And selfish.
And selfish. Mm-hmm. So what did they do? They rebelled. They ate. And there was that began the fall of man, mankind. We'll never understand what life was like before the fall between Adam and Eve and the Father and God who walked with them through the garden during the cool of day. But when we grow dissatisfied with what the information God's given us or the knowledge or the revelation, that's not to say we don't keep learning, but when it becomes an idol, more important to us than God himself or more important, so important that we need to know, that's when things start to break down.
Yeah. Wow, that's very interesting. That kind of goes into our next question, which is spiritual health and being happy.
Yes.
As you are and, you know, having purpose. How has your perspective changed of spiritual health throughout these years with C3 Church, but then also as a parent and a husband?
Mm, that is a really good question. In my teens, 20s and 30s, I was high functioning. Worked really hard. I stayed up all night to get it right. Nothing less than the best would do. I went for it. As a musician, I practiced till my fingers bled. The house always had to be clean. Life had to be ordered, a tick in every box. There was this need for perfection and a high standard of excellence in everything that I did. It got to a stage in my late 30s where I started to hate the things that I was supposed to be loving.
Yeah.
And I think what had happened was that I had violated my emotional, mental, spiritual, and physical limitations for too long.
Mm-hmm.
And it crept in. It was insidious, inch by inch. Suddenly I became aware of things I was never aware of before. The people-pleasing, the trying to present a polished image, not accepting a life where you're not okay, always got to be okay. And suddenly realizing, well, it is actually okay to not be okay. Trying to live life in my own strength. You know, trying to live a life I was never called to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to become really aware of it in my late 30s, and I crashed. And what happened was, there was a period in my life when I 39, turning 40, where I took several weeks off and I couldn't even start a sentence when I woke up in the morning. I was so mind fried and my soul was so warped. And my emotions had been so stuffed and ignored. I had pretty much disconnected myself from my heart.
Yeah.
For 20 years.
Major, major, major burnout.
We're talking major.
Yeah.
It's 5 years on. I'm still walking it out. I'm a lot better than I was.
Yeah.
But it changed my life forever.
Yeah.
My whole life. Good. Well, my value system changed. Things that used to be high value are now low value or no value. My worldview changed. My philosophy on things changed. My definition of success and failure changed, and the way I parented changed. Yeah. No longer was I requiring my kids to be a certain type of child or person, or no longer was I transferring or projecting onto them my value system, but rather I began to integrate into our family this concept of soul care,
mm-hmm.
Authenticity, recognizing the warning shots across the bow when you're not just doing too much, but you're doing too much for too long. When you're not recognizing when you're flooded, triggered, reactive, sped up, scattered, not present. You know, where you're just, you're basically running a million miles an hour, but your doing is greater than your being can sustain.
Yeah.
And so I changed.
Yeah.
I let a lot of things go. I worked a lot less. I rested a lot more. I started to encourage the kids to carve out sufficient time to think and work out why they do the things they do. Is it really that important to them? What do they really value? And began to emphasize peace, rest, stillness, and regulation as a high value in our lives and in our family.
Was the transition difficult? Like, was it that transition between your old and new values?
Yes, it was very difficult.
Painful?
Very painful. Sometimes it's hard to distinguish between emotional pain and physical pain because they can be so closely related.
They can, and not many people realize.
They don't talk about it.
No.
You have to fall from a dizzy height and hit rock bottom in life.
To realize
some things.
Yeah.
You can read it in a book. You can talk about it with friends. You can hear it preached from the pulpit in a church or hear it on a number one podcast. But until you've hit rock bottom, until you've crashed and hit a wall, right, where you actually cry out to a greater power, to God, to your divine creator, help, that you start to see shafts of light. And guess what? You actually start to realize what true humility is. You've reached your limitations. You've come face to face with your authentic self. And you start to realize that all those things you get told growing up, you can be whatever you want.
Mm.
When you get older, if you want to be the next Tommy Emmanuel or John Mayer, you can. If you want to be the next Kathy Freeman, you can. If you want to be the Prime Minister of Australia, you can. It's actually not true.
Mm.
You can't be just whatever you want to be because we all have limitations. Our physical limitations, gift mix, family of origin, where we live, marital status, how much money we have, they're all limitations and every single one of us has them and has to embrace them as a gift from God to keep us reliant on Him and to keep us from getting proud, conceited and arrogant.
Mm. That's really interesting because there's actually like a big question or just like kind of mindset going around. Kids these days, they don't want to work.
Mm.
Like I relate to some degree, but I still want to contribute to society somehow or like, you know, to a bigger purpose.
Yes.
But kids, they don't want to work. They don't see the satisfaction or the happiness in working a job to get money, to have a house, to be with someone, have kids.
Mm.
Those kids have kids, grow old, then die.
Mm.
It's kind of like it's not. They like it's, as we said before, the whole like self-preservation, I'm doing this for me.
Yes.
Theology is they don't want to work because it's not going to be for them because I think they realize that how everything, I mean, you really want to go into the whole government situation, like where these rules have been set up to control us. And I think they realize this. So what do you think about, because how do you, I don't know, what's your thoughts towards that? How they...
the work ethic thing. Yeah. I think they have seen so much dysfunction.
Yeah.
They've seen it in school.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they've seen, they've gone to school, and they've had teachers who have not prepared for lessons, haven't been able to control the class, have set assignments, but then there's been double standards or a changing of the goalposts. There's a lot of students in schools that have seen the dysfunction of the education system that's broken, and everybody knows it's broken.
Yeah.
So this generational age group is marked by logic and reason. I think faith, right, and having a vision and casting a vision and going somewhere is can sometimes be where logic and reason stops.
Yeah.
And that leap of faith kicks in.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for the most part, I think the vast majority can often look at something and if they can't see the logic in it, or they can't see the reason in it, or they can't see any merit to it, or it looks like shifting chairs around on the Titanic, they will disengage and you will lose them.
Yeah.
And so they've had a staple diet of dysfunction. They have seen it, dysfunction in politics. They've seen dysfunction in family. They've seen marriages break down. They've seen people be fickle with relationships. They haven't felt like they've been cared for to the degree that they should have been by teachers in schools.
And they realize that too.
Correct. They're aware of it. Yes, they've seen sexual abuse. They've seen the church hasn't grown. Mm-hmm. They've seen their parents in Christian circles give, but the return on investment hasn't been there. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, I think there's a lot of people who go, I'm reluctant to stick my neck out and give 1,000% because I've seen other people do it. The literature's all there to read and it hasn't always been cracked up to be.
Yeah. It's disappointing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they desperately want to be loved and mentored. And sure. I think they are prepared to work hard. But I think the moment they sniff a sort of a mixed motive or a hidden agenda,
yeah,
or something is being told to them that is played out differently, you lose them.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to get back. I think trust and authenticity are such high values.
Oh my gosh.
And they've had a staple diet of the exact opposite.
Yeah. And like the amount of trauma, like not so like confronting trauma.
It's been hidden or subtle. The hidden
trauma, like it's so wide.
Yes.
Like it goes deep, but it's so much like every child has. Everyone goes through trauma.
Of course.
Through different degrees. But I definitely agree with like the dysfunction is trauma. Because I remember going through school and I was like, what is the point of this?
Of course.
This makes no sense. Like yeah.
That's exactly what Madison said.
Yeah.
It's exactly what Michaela and Lachlan, all of them say.
Yeah.
All of our kids and our kids' friends, they're scratching their heads going, can you please explain to me why going to a classroom where a teacher's swearing and paper planes are being thrown across the room only to count down the 50-minute lesson mm-hmm. where the kids are not under control and we're not really learning anything, how is that a good use of my time?
Yeah.
And do you know what? They've got a point.
They have a massive point. And also the learning material as well.
Hmm.
Like you go into, like history is so important, but the amount of history we don't learn about, because especially in first world countries that we do live in, we don't learn about the third world countries, or we don't learn about the bad that our first world countries have done.
No. Or white privilege or racism.
Exactly. It's all hidden.
If education was prepared to emphasize life skills that I consider to be critical for survival, such as negotiating solutions with your opponent in life that consider things from not just your perspective but from theirs as well,
mm-hmm.
Working in a team mm-hmm. that's collaborative where you actually end up helping other people get to the place that they want to be, how to manage time and money well, how to satisfy the difference between needs and wants, working out what your enough is, working out what your skills are, what your gift mix is, where you'd be well suited.
And being happy with those skills.
Correct.
Because a competition with like skill sets is crazy, because I know some people like they could be fantastic at making jewellery
mm-hmm.
and then someone who's great at running and, you know, wants to be in the Olympics. It's like all of a sudden the person who's really good at making jewellery is like put way down on the scale to the person who's athletic.
Yep.
I'd say, how do you find that satisfaction in your skill set? Because they are yours.
Well, you can't buy into the tyranny of exceptionalism.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is you and I and everybody else, doesn't matter what age we are confronted with the sheer exceptional every day of our lives on social media feeds, YouTube and in the news. And the problem is that what we are seeing that's so exceptional has not only become the norm by which we stack up and measure our lives, but it's also 0.00000001% of the global population.
Yeah.
So the person who jumps out of the plane on a BMX mm-hmm. bike with you know, a parachute on, the ice skater, the elite sports person, the freaky musician or singer-songwriter, the incredible businessman, those people represent the vast minority. But because we see them every day, all day, on our feeds,
we think they're everywhere.
We not just think it everywhere, we think it's normal, and we think that we have to stack up
yeah.
and measure up, and that is the new normal. That's the mm-hmm. benchmark to success.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with is it rewrites the brain plasticity in our head and causes us to build on lies and not on truth.
Yeah, that is so interesting. And that actually goes into lies and no truth.
Oh, good.
So next question.
Yes.
Bit of a sentence first. So to a lot of the newer generations, religion has a certain cultish stigma right. and has been seen to be spread by fear,
yes.
which is true. How do you think the stigma of Christianity being seen as a cult can be removed and replaced with spreading love? Because that is true Christianity, isn't it?
Well, it really is. I mean, if you were to if you were to analyze and explore and study the way of Jesus, being an apprentice of Jesus,
mm-hmm.
you would realize how much of what goes on in the modern day church is the antithesis to what he was talking about.
Literally.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that the other day, and I don't know much, but I knew that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So Jesus, there's a lot of things he doesn't talk about in the Gospels.
Mm-hmm.
Now, St. Paul, who came after him, who wrote a lot of the New Testament, who was a super apostle, right? Our churches have been building on that ever since. And then there's obviously the Reformation, and then there's been a whole other theological emphasis since then. But if you were to go back to the way of Jesus, there's a lot of things that Jesus does emphasize. But, you know, he was always talking to the heart.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about religion. It was about relationship. It was about intimacy. But also, one of the things that Jesus did is he lived simply. He wasn't a hoarder. He might have been a carpenter before he began his ministry when he was 30. But his Palestinian ministry when he turned 30 was being financially supported by a bunch of upper-class women in society at the time. So he wanted for nothing, and he had a group of people around him that were helping him that he actually harvested for the ministry. But Jesus didn't judge people. What he went up against was double standards, religion, the absence of authenticity, criticism, people pretending to be more than they were or someone they weren't. Jesus would very often withdraw to lonely places or solitary places with no one around, where he would practice silence, solitude, simplicity, stillness.
Sounds a lot like Buddhist religion as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Where he would live life out of the overflowing cup of intimacy with God as he moved towards that relationship with his Father.
Mm.
And unfortunately, fast forward 2,000 years into the future, we've got churches all around the world that are exploding and are growing, right? People are actually receiving Christ and accepting Jesus as their Lord and Savior and following the way of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the humanity and because of the politics and because of the... There can be a lot of corruption. We've seen a lot of corruption happen as a result of things that have gone on in other religious expressions that have actually affected a lot of churches out there that don't want mm-hmm. that kind of publicity, that actually yeah. do want to be an apprentice of Jesus. Like anything, there's great churches and not so great churches. But we can't, as the church worldwide, move away from the fundamentals of emotional and spiritual health and the integration of it, intimacy with the Father, a life of simplicity, not a life of living to get. There's nothing wrong with prosperity as long as it doesn't become more important to you than God.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with being healthy in your ambition, your exploration, your sense of adventure, as long as it doesn't become more important to you than God.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we just get back to love? We actually have to uncouple and detach from judging other people's spiritual walk.
Yeah.
We as the church have got to stop judging another person's spiritual journey. We are not called to judge. We've got to ask ourselves some tough questions. Would people feel comfortable coming to our church?
Mm.
Would they feel judged?
Because it's turned into a bit of a elitist
Correct. Kind
of cult. Like,
it's a scene.
Compared to high school, it's like a clique. It's like it's a members club.
Absolutely.
And, well, I that's like my been my perspective as well, but it sounds like churches want to spread their messages.
Yeah, they want to grow.
They want to grow, but how is that going to work if a lot of people see them as a cult?
Yeah, well, that's a real challenge, isn't it?
Mm.
Because perception is everything.
Yeah.
I think that the church probably lost a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm.
In the last maybe 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
For a bunch of reasons. Once you lose ground, it's pretty hard to get back.
Mm.
So it's up to the individual.
Yeah.
Like yourself or myself or the guy next door who professes to love God, to actually not feel obligated to convince others or win others to Christ or persuade them, you know, to align with your belief system, but to simply love them.
Yeah.
And to be Jesus' hands and feet.
Yeah.
without judgment, bias, prejudice, to be the genuine article, to be authentic,
mm-hmm.
and to allow the Holy Spirit to move through you as an individual to bring whatever revelation, transformation, comfort, or insight is needed, and to actually pretty much get out of the way so God can do what he wants to do in that person's life.
Yeah.
That's the future.
That sounds like a pretty good future to me.
Let's believe for it.
Yeah. What's your connection between mental and spiritual health personally?
Okay. Well, I find that they're not mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
That if my mental health is in good shape, I'm going to be spiritually nourished.
Yeah.
If my spirit and my soul are not warped, but I've given sufficient time to catch up to my soul, then my mental health is going to be, I'm going to be clear, I'm going to be present, I'm going to have perspective, I'm going to have clarity, I'm not going to be scattered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting, the brain sends just as many messages to the heart, but the heart sends just as many messages back to the brain.
Yeah.
We think it's the brain to every other organ in our body, but our heart, there's enough scientific evidence that's conclusive that the heart sends just as many messages back to the brain.
Yeah.
And so I don't think they're exclusive. I think that when one's doing well, the other's doing well.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for joining in on the Femina podcast. That definitely brought a lot of perspective to me. I hope it brings a lot of perspective to everyone else.
Wonderful.
Any last words you'd like to say?
No, I really appreciate coming on the podcast and chatting with you, because really great questions, thought-provoking questions, and I come away really nourished really want to go away and have a good think about what we talked about.
Yeah, we're definitely going to be up tonight thinking about everything. But that's what it's all about.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.
Wait, before you go, I have some exciting news for you guys. Femina & Co. officially has a Patreon page. Many of you may not know what a Patreon page is. It's pretty much a page where we can upload our behind the scenes, unedited podcasts, and 18 plus content. I'm talking about articles, bits of podcasts, and experiences from our amazing voices and professionals that may not be appropriate for Instagram and Facebook and our website. A lot of it's going to be our sexual health content, which is coming up real soon, which I'm so excited for. And also what will be part of that content will be stories and experiences that may come across as confronting and traumatizing. So if you don't want to miss out on all our behind the scenes stuff and all our 18 plus content, go join our Patreon now. It is Femina & Co. If you don't want to join, that's okay. I won't be offended. We love you nonetheless. But yeah, that's my exciting news. All right. Bye, guys.